My name is Victor Kubik, President of the United Church of God. Welcome to another episode of the Inside United podcast. Our guest today is Johnny Lambert, a pastor of the United Church of God and elder for many years who lives in upstate New York. He is one of our innovative and courageous pioneers doing a work of proclamation in the Baltic Republics, the Russian-speaking areas of the world, as well as Scandinavia. Johnny is responsible for the translation of the gospel message primarily in the Russian and Estonian languages through the Beyond Today magazine, which formerly was the Good News magazine, the Bible study course, and other literature. So welcome to Inside United, Johnny.
Thank you, Victor. I really appreciate you having me on Inside United. It's particularly nice for me to be able to share this time with you because of the personal friendship we have had for approximately 30 years now. I don't know exactly when we became such close friends, but I know it's been at least 30 years.
We have been friends for about that period of time, but also have known about you through other people, particularly my brother, who was, you know, in upstate New York as well. So you've been an elder again for many years. Johnny, I think maybe right from you, tell us and give us a quick history of your being an elder.
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit and say that we were baptized. Hazel and I were baptized together. So that's an important part of my being an elder, is the fact that she's included with everything right from the beginning. She's really an important part of anything that I've been able to accomplish. So we were baptized in 1968 in Atlanta by Ken Swisher in his basement. And in 1973, we moved from Atlanta to Elmira, New York, Western New York. Then in 1980, I was ordained by Britt Taylor and Jim Franks. I believe it was Pentecost. So it's been 41 years now.
Well, what I'd like to do, Johnny, is to talk about your work that has centered in Estonia. Maybe you can tell us about how that came about, because at that time, this was in the mid-1990s, actually, the very first time that I traveled to Estonia was 1994. In about 1996 or 1997, we had a Feast of Tabernacles, and that's when you showed up. It wasn't an official Feast of Tabernacles, but you came there, and that's how we met. Tell us more.
I had been looking for an opportunity to serve. Since 1995, when Worldwide broke up, I got a big wake-up signal myself, and I went back and studied doctrines myself. And so whenever I did that, I came to the conclusion that I needed to serve a lot more than I had been serving leading up to that time. And Ozzie Engelbart had been to visit his old home around Mount Pocono and came by and stopped at our house. And I told him at that time, it was just a very personal conversation between myself and Ozzie, that I was looking for a place where I could serve. And so he took that to heart. And I guess you had called him, according to what he told me, you had called him and asked him if he could find somebody who could go to that Feast of Tabernacles in Estonia in 1997. So he called me up and he said, I found an opportunity for you to serve. It's in Estonia. There's going to be a small Feast of Tabernacles there. And Victor asked me to see if I could find somebody who was willing to go there and serve at that feast. So my response to him was, Ozzie, I will go. But now tell me where it is.
Where is Estonia?
Where's Estonia?
I remember when we came there, the Feast of Tabernacles was in kind of a basement of a hotel. The Cantry, yeah. That's where it was, on the outskirts of town. And it was kind of strange because I didn't know what I was doing. You know, you think you didn't know what you were doing. I didn't know what I was doing. And my connection to that area was that these were former republics of the USSR, meaning that one of the languages that was spoken. In fact, the primary language was Russian. The Russian language is spoken in all the 15 republics. And then, of course, a local language was Estonian. And so in that way, I was able to at least relate to the older people in the Russian language and communicate with them. Then we had Johnny, and then we had Ozzy, as you mentioned. And the reason for Ozzy was that his wife is Russian-speaking as well. Both his wife and I had similar backgrounds in being born overseas and coming over as children to the United States a long time ago. So that was our Feast of Tabernacles, and that's where Johnny was immersed into the Estonian people. Let's go on with your story.
Okay, I guess one of the things that we noticed, just going back to the cantry and thinking about it, at the end of the feast, I had noted that everybody in that area, that country, would not look at us or smile at us. So I asked Ulo Maring, one of the local members there at the cantry, what do the Estonian people think of us Americans? And Ulo said, he put his head down, kind of shook it from side to side, and he looked back up at me with a very serious face, and he says, to us, you Americans are just like hyenas, always laughing, but we don't know what's so funny. We wonder if you're laughing at us.
Well, this is a hyena thing, too. I know in Ukraine, you know, when they take family pictures, everybody has a very serious, sober look on their face. And they said, you Americans, you have these pictures of all of you smiling and showing your teeth. You all look like hyenas. You know? That's just not part of their culture to be smiling and happy appearing. Now, they might be happy inside, but they don't show that publicly because officially you're to look sober and dignified.
Well, the Estonians had learned over years and years that they didn't look anybody in the eye, because looking somebody in the eye would attract attention, and they were afraid of that attention. It said in the history books before I went, I read that the Russians had killed 200,000 Estonians when they first came into the country right after World War II. And so that was in the back of all of their minds.
You know, Estonia is part of the ring of countries around the Baltic Sea. But all those countries have such violent and tragic histories. You know, Estonia no less. As you mentioned, 200,000 people were killed. And the Germans came, the Russians came, the land was devastated, the suffering is just untold of what had happened. And so people were traumatized. People knew that if they stepped out of line, they could be obliterated. And so they took these defensive measures. And that's part of the nature of the people, the sobriety, the seriousness, and always being dominated. They weren't really governed. They were just dominated. What people in America don't understand is that the freedoms that we have are absolutely taken for granted of the ability that we have to speak up, to communicate with one another. This is not true of those countries, especially in areas where the Russians had a hand in domination, which they had for hundreds of years.
And, of course, since the Russian control has lessened and as time has gone by, the Estonian people are much more free to interact with us and to share all things with us. And they're much more like the American people now than they were then. There was a time leading up to up to 1990 when it was against the Russian rules for anybody to learn English. And so we were going into the Estonian country and we couldn't speak to them in English because nobody, essentially, well, a very few people knew English. Mm-hmm. And so that was a difficulty that we had to negotiate through. Mm-hmm. And we started out with that by trying to translate as much literature as we could into the Estonian language. and then to publish it in their language so they could read it in a language that they understood.
So they were part of the USSR. The one thing about the USSR is the countries were also diverse from one another. Some were Slavic, and these people are not Slavic. These people are Nordic, very much like the Finnish people. And their language has similarities to the Finnish language, although it's really still quite different. And there's only maybe like 1.5 million or 2 million people in the world that speak Estonian as compared to the major languages. So Johnny was a pioneer in that movement of translating literature and even sermons into the Estonian language. But I'd like to interrupt with one more thing. How in the world did we even think of going to Estonia? And the history begins back in the 1980s, where a professor from Australia moved to Estonia. And it wasn't to Estonia, it was moving back to the USSR. He was, I believe, a math professor to work at the University of Tartu, which is the largest university in the Baltic Republics. So he actually left a free country to move to Estonia, which was a homeland, his homeland at one time. And he was a person who was a Christian. You know, he was a person in the church. And he started a little group around himself in the city of Tartu, which is the second largest city in Estonia. And this area was serviced by our churches, in Germany, where the pastor there came on a regular basis, quarterly or sometimes even monthly, from Germany up to Estonia to service those people. So that's kind of how we got started in that area. And then, you know, after 1995, we kind of moved in, and then Johnny became more involved. Maybe, Johnny, you can tell us about after your first Feast of Tabernacles, after you met these people with long faces who didn't smile at you. What was the attraction? Why did you want to pursue your work there?
Well, my attraction was, going back to what I had said about wanting to find a place to serve, it looked to me like this was the place where I would be able to serve and be able to do the most to help the most people. And I believed very much in the mission of the church. I believed in the gospel of the kingdom. I wanted to share that with as many people as I could. And I don't know that it would have been so different somewhere else. It wasn't that the Estonian people were the most favored people on the face of the earth, as I was concerned. They were, because I got to know them. But it could have been the same with anybody else. But the main thing that motivated me, Victor, was the opportunity to share in the commission that God had given to his church, and the notion that we look at the logo on the front of the lectern every time we speak, you know, it says preaching the gospel and preparing the people. I wanted to become one of those prepared people and to help as many other people as God would call to also be one of those people who could share in that mission and help bring other people in.
And I just want to say, Johnny, you have done that. You have done that in a very, very big way. You didn't go there just to visit the people. You actually left behind, you know, quite a legacy of literature and things that will be still there for a long time. But now, after the first Feast of Tabernacles, what we did was Johnny started coming back year after year for the Feast of Tabernacles. And it grew with the people that would assemble there and visitors that would come from the United States and European areas and the United Kingdom that would come there for the Feast of Tabernacles, which was held in the city of Tartu. Those were happy moments because I came several of those years. And I remember being that being a high point of the year. And there's something about the Estonian people. There's a beauty to them. There's a kind of mystique to those people that I know was an attraction for you and your son and for all of us. I mean, I've really enjoyed being with the people as you get to know them personally about how they are. But continue on with your story.
You had started before I got there, and having a couple of people translate some of the Bible study courses. Margaret Calgers had translated one or two of the lessons, and I was looking for some way to expand on that, not only with the Bible study courses, but with the booklets that we had, because I thought they, in the language, they would be helpful to people that were being called by God, who really had no basis for reading the things in the English language. It's partly as a matter of the fact that they had been forbidden from learning English. And so we started doing that, but we also started to, it was a year or so later, we started to hold telephone Sabbath day services every week. And so it was kind of a bizarre situation, I guess. I'd have to get up about 4 o'clock to match their time schedule and call them at 6 o'clock. And they would be at that time at the Palace Hotel, and there would be a translator there. I would be speaking in English, and the translator would then translate from the English that I spoke or that you spoke, because you were there on the telephone some few times. And we got in touch with them and spoke to them through the translator. And they were responsive to that. And then one day, you were on the line. I wasn't. You were on the line. One day, you called in Estonia, and the translator had not shown up. And so, if they can't speak English, and they don't speak Ukrainian very much or know it very well, you were then kind of up a creek without a paddle, should we say. But at that meeting, there was a new person who had come, and she knew English well. Embi Kuska Salu. Mm-hmm. And she translated for you that day at services, and from then on, she was a translator. Part of this is in my mental images, the fact that God was providing these things as we needed them. And she was what we needed to be able to have someone at services. And for like 4 or 5 years, she translated while we would call, first of all, on the telephone, and then we would call on Skype. And the only reason she had gotten to learn English, that she had been allowed to learn English, was that her father was a member of the Communist Party, sort of a middle-ranking communist governmental official. And so because of that, she was allowed to go to a special school, and in that special school they taught English, and so she had learned English. And so if God is doing something, how long has he been doing it before she came? And the thing about it was the story that she told to me later on. She said, I always turned my radio on a certain so that I had time. It was a clock radio, or radio that was an alarm clock. She said, on this particular morning, I had the clock turn on, and it was on a station I had never listened to. And on that station, they were advertising, because we had started to advertise for the Plain Truth, I think it's not the Plain Truth, but the Good News magazine at the time.
Right.
And so she called, and she got Thomas Shavak on the phone. And so she went from there to the Palace Hotel that next Sabbath, and you called. So you and Envy and apparently the leadership of God put that all on the table so that it was beginning to function quite well.
It was really wonderful how the right people were brought in at the right time. Envy, at first, was one of the very first pioneers to really, really help us in a big way. But you mentioned Thomas Schwach, who I feel has been just a phenomenal resource and helper to this very
day. To this very day.
Tell us about Thomas.
Thomas, when he was 16 years old, he told me, started a quest to determine who was right about all among all of the religions on the face of the earth. And he boiled it down to where he thought Herbert Armstrong was correct. And so he then wrote a letter to Cincinnati. And he asked in that letter if the church still believed what Herbert Armstrong taught in 1955 concerning healing. Mm-hmm. Now, Cincinnati sent the message to me and asked me to respond to Thomas Schwach. Well, I responded by saying, I figured he's an old man. If he's been reading what Herbert Armstrong wrote as long ago as 1955, he must be an old guy. And I wrote him back, and I don't know what Herbert Armstrong taught in 1955, but here's what we believe. And I tried to set it out as according to what the church had to say that we believe about the subject of healing. Mm-hmm. And in that message, I invited him to come to the Holy Days in Tartu, which I was going to be going to. Mm-hmm. And he said he was coming. And so I told him where we were meeting in the upper room in the Palace Hotel. And I was up in the conference room, and here came this like 20-year-old individual climbing the stairs. He wasn't what I expected from 1955 at all. and so he came in and he started to contribute. He was just a really well-credentialed translator and individual who was one of the leading people in the library system in Estonia, and represented the country in certain library situations when the EU was trying to consolidate at least the database for all literature in all of the languages. So he represented the whole country. So that's the kind of quality individual you have as far as his intellectual and educational experience went. And he dove right in, helping us right away. He took over those Bible course lessons that we were translating. He translated them, you know, and went all the way through the 12. And he communicated back and forth with people who were doing the publication work here in the United States. One was Judy Seeker. And she was turning the translated materials with Thomas's help, because it's very hard for you to build a publication if you don't know the language and coordinate the pictures and the things like that together with the language. And so she was back and forth with him, and they went through half of the Bible course lessons. And then another lady from the Binghamton Church by the name of Carolyn Barker joined the effort, and she was really, really good at it as well. And so between Thomas, Judy, and Carolyn Barker, they turned out the 12 Holy Days and started on publications of the booklets, the pamphlets. The first one we did was Gospel of the Kingdom, because, mm-hmm, as I said, that was one of my motivating factors to be able to share that Gospel of the Kingdom with as many people as possible.
And I know that this was quite an advancement from just coming there to the feast in 1997, when I believe it was the first time you came, to where now there was all this development. And there was a metamorphosis in the country, like I said, back when I first visited in 94, it was very Russian-speaking, Russian signs. And, of course, it was 1991 when the country became independent. But there was a transformation from it becoming Russian to wanting to even abandon Russian speaking. And Russian went downhill. And like you said, English was forbidden to be spoken. And English started rising. And English has become a major language, you know, in Estonia. And one thing about Estonia, I know that when I had traveled to the USSR, usually through Finland, when you saw maps of where Estonia was, there was hardly anything on the map because it was a forbidden area to visit for Americans. The city of Tartu, where Johnny Hill talked to us about a residence that he established there, was a forbidden city. You were not allowed as an American to travel to Tartu because it was a bare bomber base for the Soviet Air Force. And they patrolled the Baltic, you know, from Tartu, Estonia. And now, just a few years later, the airfield where the bear bombers were located became a parking lot, you know, or became...
For car sales.
For cars. I mean, it was just amazing how Russia just took a deep dive and freedom, the English language, arose. And that was just an interesting metamorphosis to see just before our eyes and opened the door, paved the way for Johnny to be able to, on his own, to be able to motivate this development of the language of not only Estonian, but now he can tell us a little bit about even the Russian language, because it is so huge, even though it wasn't the popular language in Estonia. Certainly there's just a lot of Russian speaking all around.
Well, the Russian influence in Estonia was because Stalin had brought in a large number of Russian citizens and resettled them into Estonia because he wanted to Russify the country. It wasn't only Estonia into which he did that, but a lot of the Eastern European nations to try and tie them ultimately back to Russia. That was underlying everything. And when I went in 97 to that first Feast of Tabernacles, I was with the Engelbarts. We arrived together into Tartu, and you and Darlene met us at the bus station about, I don't know, very early in the morning. I remember it was really dark, and there were frost and frozen ponds from rain all along the streets. But I had, I think, two sermons and a couple of sermonettes to give at that feast. And so I knew Tina, and I had my sermons and sermonettes translated into Russian, and the Estonian people could listen and understand Russian. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there's this little tiny slither of Estonians, like less than a million, and here's this huge number of people in the Russian-speaking population throughout Eastern Europe. At the time, I think they said one person in 10 could speak the Russian language. And so it was obvious to me as to where I could do the most to be able to get the gospel of the kingdom to the most people would be to begin something with Russian. But again, I didn't really have any resources to do that. You said I helped translate. Well, I didn't really help translate. I couldn't speak any of those languages myself. I was essentially a cheerleader, bringing other people and getting them to do the job. There's Thomas Shavak and Imbikuska Salu, and we were there at the Atlantis for the feast in the year 2000, and this woman from Belarus came into the building, and I didn't have any idea who she was, but that was Natasha. And Natasha stayed for the Feast of Tabernacles, and before the end of the feast, you and I baptized her in the pool up over the Estico building. And she began to translate. She learned a lot about our doctrine. And for to have somebody who is a competent translator, they have to know a lot about doctrine and a lot about the Bible. And the third skill is the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to know two languages very well.
Well, Natasha certainly was a gem, and she still is.
She
actually works at the home office, and she manages the Russian-speaking publications. And for that matter, also the Estonian, while she doesn't understand it, she is able to produce the Estonian Beyond Today or Good News magazine and the Russian. And, you know, we're very, very good friends. In fact, I saw her today and told her I was doing this podcast here today. I'm sure she'll be very interested in it. So as we move on into the year 2000s, Natasha, I believe, kind of came to Estonia. That was about the year 2000 that
she came. 2000, the Feast of Tabernacles.
Right. And then we had other people who came from the United States, Bob Fay and his family, and we had other people who came to be speakers. And one thing about people that came over from anywhere outside of Estonia to Estonia would fall in love with it. You come to Estonia, it's like coming to Scandinavia. It has the Scandinavian feel. The people have the nature of the Scandinavians, and it's very, very interesting that way. Go ahead.
Okay, about the year 2003, I got a letter from Valdor Vasingi. He was a prisoner in the maximum security prison in Tartu, the Vangala, they called it. And he asked me in that letter if he was understanding correctly that the churches that were established in this world were absolutely, completely wrong. And so I told him he was understanding correctly. And I recommended that he could confirm that by reading the Bible himself. And so after a while, the coming year, at Christmas time, he and another individual in the prison there, who was a rock singer, who had been put in prison because of drug abuse, organized a Bible study in the prison. And Thomas and I went there, and along with half a dozen other people, Andy went, Andres Rips went.
And all these people that we had known. It's just so nice to hear their names.
I gave a Bible study there in the prison. And after that Bible study, Valdor came up to me and introduced himself. And we started to visit him in the prison. And he could only have one visit in a calendar month. Now, it could be more than one person in the visit, but he could only have one in a calendar month. He had never had a visit from anybody.
Hmm.
He had family, too. You know, he had a wife, and he had, like, three children, but not one of them and had ever been to visit him. But we visited him for a period of 10 years, and you visited him, I know, several times.
About two or three times.
And so after a couple of years, he offered to start translating himself. And so I didn't know whether he was up to this particular thing or not, because it's something I wasn't qualified to judge. And so I said, okay. And he went and translated one of our booklets. I think the first one, if I remember correctly, was Who is God?
Mm-hmm.
And he got that all translated. And, of course, I'm looking at something that might as well be Chinese to me. And I don't know whether it's good, bad, indifferent, whether he's praising Satan or what. You know, I knew from having known him that I could trust him, but I didn't know how competent he was as a translator. I knew that Thomas Chivok was very competent as a translator. So I sent the transcript to Thomas, and I asked Thomas to please let me know what he thought of it. And then within a week, Thomas sent me back. He said, "This is very, very good. I could not do better myself."
Wow.
That was high praise. And Baldur translated then, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 booklets, something like that. The Bible course lessons were already by that time completed. And they were also in Russian. We had, I think, 14, we have now 14 booklets that are translated into Russian, and we have 11 booklets in the Estonian language, plus the 12 Bible course lessons. And every issue until the last year and a half of the Good News or the Tomorrow's World magazine, we can't call it Tomorrow's World in Estonia because it doesn't translate.
Or Beyond Today. Language. Not Tomorrow's World, is Beyond Today.
Beyond Today, yeah.
Beyond Today.
Beyond Today.
Yeah.
I'm getting all mixed up with my publication names here.
Yeah.
And I made up a list here. We have about 1,500, I have down here 1,555 people that we considered subscribers. Most of those people received all of the 12 Bible course lessons, mm-hmm. and we're continuing to send them those inserts from Beyond Today.
Yeah, I know that you'd go to your apartment and you would be stuffing the literature. Bev and I had done that on 2 occasions. You know, we had done that.
And
quite a project.
And she left the apartment immaculately clean.
Yeah, I think that you had a hard time finding things because she had put so many things away just so nicely. But anyway, I remember doing that, and I might just mention that Johnny had bought an apartment in Tartu and has at that time been able to travel there about 4 times a year. Is that right?
4 times a year is what I was doing.
And then Johnny would meet with the people. He would have church services, Bible studies, and really attached himself. Not only in the preaching of the gospel, which he did, you know, through the publications, but also in being close to the people, visiting with them, eating with them, and really caring for them. I just really admired that. And he had that from his apartment, which was kind of a nice size. You know, he could have a nice big living room, and you know, people would come there.
Can I interrupt this, Victor, for a minute? The apartment was not anything I ever expected to have. And I just want to bring this out because, to me, it's a big part of God's intervention to be able to bring these things about. The apartment was expensive. It wasn't cheap. Mm-hmm. And I had thought when I went into the idea of thinking about buying an apartment to find some little cheap place where I could throw a sleeping bag down and have a telephone, cook an egg, but without any, that's right. When we needed an Estonian translator, Thomas walked through the door. When we needed somebody to translate on the telephone calls, Imbi Kuskasalala heard a radio advertisement, walked through the door. When we needed a Russian speaking person who could translate and was quite literate in the Russian language, Natasha walks into the Feast of Tabernacles in the year 2000. And all of those things I cannot think are coincidental.
No, that's true. It's really a wonderful story when you put your hand to attempt something that God came through with what was needed.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I didn't solicit anybody for funds to be able to have that apartment. Or anything else. But people just stepped up and contributed without being asked. There were all contributions. And I may say, in that regard, we have never wanted for money to be able to do the things that we've done in the Estonian area. And so I just know that God is deeply involved and is helping it to be able to succeed, because it's His will.
But now, Johnny, tell us about where we're at today now in Estonia. What's ahead?
I'm hoping that we'll be able to go back there. We've been shut out of Estonia for a year and a half now. And we had planned two Feasts of Tabernacles, which have now been canceled because Americans can't go to the country. And we're hoping that that's going to come to an end. I haven't decided to be vaccinated. I mean, I have decided that I will be vaccinated, but I haven't been vaccinated. I know that that's going to be a requirement for me to be able to go back there, and I'm ready to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the magazine inserts have been sent to the Russians from Cincinnati, but I think I can do it printed there in Estonia cheaper and mail it cheaper than it's being done from the Cincinnati office. That's the reason we invested in the printer, and that's the reason that we hope that we'll be able to get back there and use that printer and distribute the things that are coming out in the magazine to the Russian-speaking especially, and also the Estonian people.
Well, Johnny, I just marvel as to what you have done, how God has blessed you, and how God will continue doing it. And also, I know that all those things that you have sent out, all the literature, and all the things that are in people's hands in those languages, that God's word will not return to Him void. It will do what He intends for it to do. And I just admire you for being so courageous and pushing this thing forward when other people would just stare at it as insurmountable. We do appreciate what you have done.
Well, I'm very thankful that I've been able to do that, Victor. And to me, it's been very gratifying.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Johnny, for joining us. I know that we could talk longer, and I think we need to do another podcast.
Couple of days, maybe.
Thank you very much for being with us, Johnny.
Thank you very much for the love and friendship that we've shared over the years. And it's been very gratifying to me, and to see that you've performed a big part of the leadership in the thing that I believe is most important.
Thank you very much for being with us. And also, I want to thank our audience for joining us here on Inside United. Please be sure to tell your friends about our weekly podcast. Tell us, you can tell them about the people that we meet, the stories that we tell, and historical things from the United Church of God. It's a wonderful, wonderful story. You can find us easily on the ucg.org homepage. We're on the main menu line. Go to podcast and click or tap on the podcast button. Also, you can visit us and see all our previous podcasts here. Also, we're on Spotify. We're on Spotify. Go to podcasts and search for Inside United. You can also find us through your favorite Apple or Android podcasting app and have it come to you weekly just by coming to you. So we'd love to hear from you. Please write to us at podcast@ucg.org, podcast@ucg.org. I know that Johnny would love to hear from you, and I'd love to hear about your impressions of this podcast. So have a great week, and we'll see you again soon.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.